Well, hello and welcome to episode 84 of the Payers and Players podcast. My name's Robert. I'm here with Scott. We've got a special episode for you today. So, Scott, why don't you tell us real quick about today's episode?
Yeah. So what I wanted to do here today was go through some data that I've been compiling. And it's been taking me, probably started this project in June, and just getting now to the point where I got everything in there that I wanted to. But what I wanted to do was take a look at the class of 2023, the boys and the girls, top 100 as ranked by Tennis Recruiting Network. So taking the top 100 senior boys and top 100 senior girls, and taking a look at where they're going to college, what their selections are for college and the variety in that, as well as going back and looking at their, what I want to call their pathway, is looking back, say, 4 years at what their tennis recruiting ranking was as a freshman, as well as their UTR, and sort of track that through the 4 years and see where they ended up and see what kind of things stood out as interesting and what were some trends and what are some things that maybe some observations that will be useful for people to sort of gauge their journey on where they stand and what benchmarks are really relevant and which ones aren't.
Yeah, it's an exciting episode because as parents, when you have a 7 or 8 year old, you really don't know what is the pathway. What is a kid who's a freshman at one ranking? What are the probabilities of them being a higher or lower ranking as a senior? So Scott has compiled a tremendous amount of data, and we're going to dive into the data in this episode. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to leave the first 5 to 8 minutes free for anybody who's listening to the podcast. But the remainder of the podcast, if you want to hear the full length version, including a screen share where we're walking through the data, then you can go to twitter.com and follow us on Payers Players and subscribe. So the first 5 to 8 minutes will be open to everybody. We just want everyone to kind of hear a little bit about it. Once we dive into it, it will be subscriber only for the in-depth version. Also, I can see in the document a few of our subscribers actually looking at the data at this moment. So also, Scott has the full data spreadsheet available for our subscribers. So with that, Scott, yeah, Let's dive into the first thing you noticed or something.
Yeah, and just to your point, I think it'd be really interesting, or you'd get a lot more out of the episode if you do follow it on with the screenshot, because there's a lot of data, and if you're just listening to it, sometimes it's hard to follow numbers when you're just listening. So I think the best way to do this, to listen to this podcast and get most out of it, would be to watch along with us as we go through the screens.
And you can do that on our Twitter account if you subscribe.
Right. And like Robert said, the full data is available to subscribers. There's a link in our Twitter feed for that. So that's how you can get a hold of this data.
So. All right. Well, Scott, tell us, do we want to do boys, girls, or do we want to just go across both genders all at the same time?
I think we'll do a little bit of both at the same time, but you know, there's sort of three ways I wanted to sort of look at it. One would be maybe just where the kids ended up going to college. And then we can look at some of the UTR ranges and metrics, and then we can see the sort of the top 100 fluidity. So I think if we look at those three areas, we'll look at the boys and girls within each of those areas. So
yeah, and just to give a plug on our previous episode with David Roditi from TCU, he talks a little bit about when a recruit reaches out to him, one of the first things he does is check their UTR. And so you can go back to that episode and dive in to get kind of the mind's eye of a D1 college coach who's highly successful and see how much the data we're talking about today matters to somebody who's actually recruiting kids.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah.
All right. So give us the first thing you noticed.
So what I wanted to do was sort of look at sort of where the kids are going to school. You know, one of the things that we, you know, always are thinking about is, you know, what are going to be the good fits for our kids as they go into college. And so what I wanted to do was look at sort of the top 100 boys and girls and sort of see what schools they picked. So through Tennis Recruiting Network and Parso, I was able to compile the data on where the kids went to school and what colleges they picked. For instance, I'm looking on the boys tab right now. And, you know, there's a, you know, column F would just show what college each one of the boys selected. You know, the first one is Alex Mickelson. He chose Georgia, but he ended up going pro. And he's really the only one in this data set that has gone pro. So of the other 99 that are in here, they're all pretty much going to college. So I figure we have a good range of players to look at. And then I'll put their conferences in so we can just sort of see where the delineation is between, you know, sort of the big Power Five conferences, the Ivy League, and then we look at the mid majors and D3. So if we summarize that, you know, I'll start here with this box here, which is the top 100 boys and girls. And, you know, as you can see, if you're looking at the screen, I highlighted where the most kids per the range selected. And, you know, so if you look at the boys, you know, 18 of the top 100 went to the ACC, 12 went to the Big Ten, 4 went to the Big 12. And 6 went to the Pac-12, and 12 went to the SEC and the Ivy League. 25 went to mid-majors, 4 went D3, and 7 are still uncommitted as of right now.
You know, that's interesting in boys. Basically, 25% of the top 100 went mid-major.
Right. And we'll break it down and sort of see how that looks by section or by groupings, because, you know, you're going to sort of see a little bit of different striation of the more elite players, your top 25 players. Not so many went mid-major, but once you get to the, say, the 50 to the 100 range, then that's where you get a lot of those kids going mid-major. You'll sort of see, you know, after the top, you know, 30 or 40 ranked players, there's a somewhat steep drop off between, you know, Power Five and mid-major.
Yeah, and one of the things I'm noticing already is a couple ways to look at this. If you're top 100 as a senior, there's almost 100% chance you'll play college tennis, or could, yeah. Right? Now, that we're not saying SEC, we're not saying where, but there is a place for you if you're top 100. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry?
Male or female, there's a place for you.
Right. So if I look at this and, you know, I see that there's only 7 uncommitted boys and 3 uncommitted girls, that's a 90%+ of kids that are going to and primarily D1 programs, and where that is. And so, like I said, you know, if we look at this, if we further break it down, say the bottom 50, so the 51 through 100, yeah, most of those kids are going mid-major. Some are still choosing some of the, maybe it's not some of the stronger programs in the Power Five, but there's a lot of kids that are still going, you know, to the ACC and the Big Ten. And there's a lot of programs in the Big Ten that probably don't compare favorably to the mid-majors. So, you know, you get a lot of strong programs in the mid-majors as well. So, yeah, so that's how that looks. And, but to your point, you know, about sort of the more elite players and where they're going, you know, if you look at the top 25 players, you know, 100% of them have chosen their colleges. 6 on the boys' side, 6 have gone to the ACC, and 6 have gone to the SEC, and 4 have gone to the Ivy League, and 5 to the Pac-12. So, you know, sort of that strong grouping is choosing those more elite programs in the power conferences. On the girls' side, it's interesting. The Ivy League is really cleaning up with the top girls. Of the most, if we look at the conferences, the Ivy League is outperforming all the Power Five conferences for girls.
So that is amazing. A third of the top 25 are going Ivy League.
Yep. Yeah. So 8 girls that in the top 25 that selected to go to college, 8 of them picked Ivy League schools. You know, that's there's 4 going to the ACC, 4 going to the Big Ten. So the ACC and the Big Ten are only equaling what the Ivy League is doing.
Yeah. And then you look at top 50, 14 of the top 50 girls going Ivy League, where 12 of the top 50 boys are going to the ACC. So it is interesting that if you're a high performing tennis player academically and in tennis, a lot of them are gravitating towards the Ivy League.
For sure. Yeah, and I think that if we look at basically, and I think that, you know, if we look at the top 100, 20 girls end up going to the Ivy League. And I think if we sort of break that down, I think that of those 20, I think they're all in the top 60. So, I mean, it's, it's a very strong group of girls that have chosen the Ivy League. So I think the Ivy League is going to see, you know, I'm not, you can't, this is only for American high school students, so it doesn't address internationals. But on the American front, the Ivy League is going to be, you know, one of the more stronger conferences going forward.
Well, and you can see the data as it diminish as the rankings go down. So 33% of the top 25 chose Ivy League in female, only 28% of the top 50, and only 20% of the top 100. So like you said, they're pulling the top players and then not really recruiting beyond that, it looks like to me.
Right.
So, I mean, it, you know, a lot of people don't love the numbers, but if you're a girl who aspires to play tennis in the Ivy League, getting in the top 50 is probably what you're going to need to do.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think what this really shows is the top 50 have a good, you know, shot at being recruitable by the power conferences. You know, the if I look at, you know, the on the boys side, the top 50, including the Ivy League, you know, we would see that there's let's see, how many is that, some of that? 43. So 43 out of the top 50 boys are in a Power Five conference or the Ivy League. So that's, you know, 86%. But then when we go down to look at the bottom 50, you know, 50 through 100, it's a lot less than that. So, you know, we go from 86% of those kids are able to go to those power conferences in the Ivy League, and then the bottom 50, only 22. So it goes from 86% to 44% are able to, you know, play in a Power Five or D1 or power program. And, you know, that really just shows sort of where that bright line is. And it looks like, you know, and the numbers make sense. You know, if the Power Five and Ivy League have about, you know, 60 teams with six, you know, starters per team, and all the international players, and then, you know, 4 years of kids, you know, on a team, you know, there's only going to be about 40 or 50 spots per year that can play at that level. So the numbers just show that.
Yeah, and so one of the things I'm seeing on this list that looks like we're going to do next, and I think this is real interesting, is the tie of the top 100 and their ranking in that top 100 and how it correlates to their UTR. And Scott literally has a chart that says if you're a boy or a girl in rankings 1 through 10, what's the average UTR of 11 to 20, 21 to 30. Now, this is the point where I want to stop and say, we're going to cut it off here for those that are subscribers. So if you want to continue to hear the analysis, we're only 10 minutes into the analysis and we're going to go for a while, because looking at the data I'm seeing on the screen, this is super fascinating how the level of the ranking directly correlates to the UTR. So if you want to continue to hear the conversation, go to Twitter, Payers and Players. You can subscribe there and see and hear the entire conversation. Yep. All right, so Scott, with that, will you tell us how the top 100 correlate to the UTR?
Yeah, so, you know, so again, this is what took probably the longest, because the data is, you know, it's out there, but it's not easy to get. So you've got to like go to each kid's UTR page and then go back and look at their, you know, history and, you know, find. And so what I did was I looked at, you know, each year I looked at their in June of 2023, June of 2022, June of 2021, and June of 2020, what their UTRs were. And so
basically their 9th through 12th grade year.
Exactly. And so I'm looking at them at the end of each one of those years. So sort of, you know, if you want to think about it, where should I be at the end of my freshman year? Where should I be at the end of my sophomore year, junior, senior year to get to where, you know, what I want to do? And, you know, this shows, again, if you're looking at the page that we have on the screen, it's just the boys class of 23 and all the players, you know, listed in order of their tennis recruiting rank, and then, you know, their highest tennis recruiting rank during the year, senior, junior, freshman, sophomore, or, you know, the order. And then same thing with the UTRs. And, you know, so what you'll see is, you know, our number one boy, Alex Mickelson, you know, he's off the charts ahead of everyone else. And it's obvious that he's not going to go to college. And why he's not going to go to college, I mean, he's, you know, he's getting into the second, third rounds of, you know, ATP events. So, but his UTR and it in May actually. So I did the boys in May, the girls in June. So the boys in May, he was a 14.7 in May. But looking back at his freshman year, he was an 11.13, which was pretty standard. You know, maybe it was still the very high range, but he wasn't the outlier that he is now. And so you can sort of go back and you can look at, you know, all the other, say, top 10 boys, where they were. You know, you have a range of, you know, 10.7 was the lowest of the top 10 boys to, you know, 12 point, you know, I think 12.18 was the highest as a freshman, and,
Well,
you know, and where they are.
the thing I noticed about this is, first off, we need to get Alex Mikkelsen on the podcast to figure out what the heck he was doing between his freshman and his senior year. That's fantastic. To go from an 11.13 to a 14.65, that's a huge increase. But also, can you imagine probably when he was a freshman playing tournaments, Kyle King, Aiden Kim, all these kids that are higher were probably beating him. And you can see
They were a full point ahead of him. You know,
a
it
full
wasn't
point
like,
ahead.
yeah, it wasn't like he was just a, you know, just a slight, you know, 0.1 difference. I mean, it was a full point. So I
Mean,
mean,
that's.
he made up a lot of ground, and you know, that's encouraging to a lot of people that, you know, you can still make those gains after that age. And you know, I think that's what we all want to believe, and we all want to see. So that's a good fact for sure.
And you look at, so if we were just to compare Alex to Kyle, number one and number two. Alex as a freshman's an 11, basically, and Kyle's a 12, basically. Now I'm rounding. As a sophomore, Alex jumped from an 11 to a 12.6, and Kyle jumped from a 12 to a 13. So huge improvement from their freshman to their sophomore year. Then you see Kyle have less improvement from sophomore to junior, but Alex still another over a point again. So he goes at 1.6, I mean 1.5, then he goes up 1.2, and then in his junior to senior year, another point almost. So, yeah, there's a lot of improvement happening there for Alex. So if there's any freshmen out there listening and you're getting beat in your national tournaments, just keep working, right? I mean, that's the lesson that tells me.
For sure. For sure. So I'll go back to the summary tab and sort of look at some of these. The box there that's in columns E through G is just sort of the averages of the senior boys and senior girls, 1 through 10, just the very, you know, the levels, 1 through 10, 11 through 20, 30, 40, all the way down there, just to sort of see, you know, sort of where things go. And you know, what sort of stands out is that difference between, say, number 40 and number 50 is sort of where you start to see the colleges drop off in terms of, you know, where they're going as far as, you know, your TCUs and your Ohio States and Georgias. You see a lot of them in the top 40, not so much after that. And that sort of shows you what the line is for the boys. You know, we've always thought that, you know, 12 is sort of what you want your target to be. And that's exactly what the data shows. 12 is the average UTR for the boys ranked 31 to 40. And for the girls, sort of that same, that's sort of where the biggest jump off point for the girls is as well. Theirs is a 9.44. So maybe the equivalency of a boy's 12 is a girl's 9.4, and you know, that gets you into the sort of the D1, sorry, Power Five, Ivy League range of schools. There is a drop off after that, not so much for the boys until you get to the 51s. But for the girls, that's sort of where the biggest drop off is, you know, there's a lot of similarity, 21 through 40 for the girls. But then when you go through 41 and down, then you're sort of low nines, high eights. But for the boys, you know, you hit that 12, and then, you know, you go down to 11.95 for the next range, and then 11.6, 11.4, 11.3, 11.2 down to the bottom of the top 100.
You know, as I look through this with you, Scott, one of the things I keep thinking is, what are the skills? Because you've got a lot of data here, right? Basically, number one through 10 was above a 13 for the boys. 11 to 20 was in the 12 and a half range, right? Girls, one through 10 is a 10.2, right? Average. 11 to 20, 9.83. So, I mean, we're talking decimal places. We're not talking a lot. But I'm trying to picture in my head, what are the skills that 11.2 has that 12.5 doesn't have?
Yeah, and like I say, that's the thing is like you sort of see this, and we'll see it when we look in sort of the fluidity part of the discussion is that top 10 is just different. They're just elite players that once they get there, they don't leave. And I think a lot of it could be self-fulfilling is because maybe at the time that, you know, they reach top 10 as a freshman, then USTA takes notice. They get a lot of, you know, coaching benefits. They get, you know, in as well as being, you know, the mindset of that player is like, I've got a real chance at this. And so then they go all in and they're able to sort of, you know, keep developing at a strong, strong level. And maybe those other kids that are just below that are just seeing, they're not getting the same attention. You know, it's not as, the grind's a little bit more difficult because they aren't getting the attention that the top 10 are getting. And so maybe they start to fall off a little bit. The opportunities, the sponsorships, et cetera, for the top 10 are different than they are for everyone else. And maybe that adds up and becomes like a cumulative difference. And so, you know, if you look at, you know, the difference between the top 10 boys and the top 10 girls versus the next 11 through 20, it's pretty big difference, you know, almost, you know, 0.7 for the boys, which is a large difference, and a 0.4 for the girls, which is also a large difference relative to their UTRs. So I think that's, you know, an interesting thing is that top 10, it really is, there is a difference between the top 10 and the rest.
Yeah, so explain this to me then, because I'm looking like at the University of Georgia women's roster on UTR right now, and it looks like their top six, of their top six, the lowest, I mean, they have a girl that's an 11.3, and they got a girl that's an 11.04, a 10.95, a 10.57, 10.28. So the highest average you got there for girls, 10.21, would barely put them in the lineup.
Yeah.
Is what's happening with girls as they're getting to college and continuing to develop? I mean, you may not have that in the data, but
yeah.
How is it that the top 10 are still outside of probably the playing range you see in college? Because I talked to a women's college coach the other day, and they'd really like to see their players be a 10 and a half or above. So what do you think the disconnect is?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll get into this a little bit more when we look at the girls' data in particular comparing it to the boys, and we'll see some of the differences in at least it's hard to say development because it may imply something different, but just the UTR growth just isn't the same thing as it is for the boys. I mean, girls they do somewhat peak a lot earlier than the boys, and so you'll sort of see that top end of the UTR range as a freshman versus as opposed to the boys, you see it more as a junior where they sort of hit their plateau. So it's kind of, it does come a little bit sooner, and it doesn't make a lot of sense because you know that they're getting better. You know that, you know, you'd think that, you know, if like you say, if you look, let's look at the number one girl, Catherine Hewiff, she's with Stanford. As a freshman, she was a 10.61. As a senior, she's a 10.59. So, I mean, that shows by UTR at least that there's no growth. There's no, you know, acceleration from where that was. So it's kind of a difficult thing to read and to really get a sense of.
Well, and to add to that, if you look as a freshman, 10.61, as a sophomore dropped nearly a full point to 9.69, then starts a climb back up 10.25, 10.59. You wonder injury, you wonder was 14s different than 16s?
Right.
So many things at play. Again, I'd love to have her on the podcast also to ask, hey, what, tell us about your journey there.
Yeah, there's a lot of, when you look at the numbers, when you look at this journey, when you look at these numbers, it does raise a lot of questions for a lot of different people. And there are different, you know, growth or what, tracks or whatever. Yeah, so growth tracks. You know, some come out of nowhere and end up, you know, like an 8.6 ends up above a 10. Another started a 10, ended up as, you know, in the nines. So, you know, it is kind of strange, I would say, on the girl side. It's hard to really get a sense of that. And you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, just the girls develop at a different pace. And you know, like I say, you know, one of the things I wanted to look at, you know, we'll look at this, maybe this is a good segue to look at what I was going to go to next, was just sort of seeing the range of UTR from freshman through senior. And so, you know, when we look at the seniors right now, that, so if we look at the top 100 boys, the range is, the highest UTR is Alex Mickelson at 14.65, and the lowest in the top 100 is 10.80.
So, and that's as a senior. That's as a senior.
Yeah. And if we go back a year, same group of kids, and look at their UTRs, we'll see that, you know, that 13.8 again was Mickelson, and the lowest was a 9.33. So if you're a junior, you want to have at least a 9.33 to be considered a top 100 player. As a sophomore, you know, that range is 8.91 at the bottom to 13.03. Our buddy Kyle Kang was at 13.03 that you mentioned earlier. And as a freshman, you know, the lowest UTR that ended up being in the top 100 was 7.97, and the highest was 12.18. So that, what that tells you is the senior class, the very lowest player in the class had a 7.97, and the very highest had a 12.18. So a pretty big gap there that does sort of narrow a little bit, you know, as we go through to senior year. But for the girls, it's a lot different. You know, it's what's amazing when you look at the girls is the top UTR from, so like I said, we'll say from the boys, you'll go from a top UTR as a freshman of 12.18 to a top of 14.65.
So and in other words, from freshman to senior, the highest end is going up.
Yes. So that's what you'd expect, right? You'd expect that from a freshman to a sophomore to junior to a senior, you should go up, you know, probably 2.5 points, and that's what you'd see for the boys. For the girls, it's shocking to say that the highest UTR was achieved by someone in the freshman class compared to the senior class. So if this the same group of girls, their highest UTR as a senior was a 10.87. As a junior, it was a 10.86. As a sophomore, it was 11.15. And as a freshman, it was 11.23. So your UTRs went from 11.23 down to 10.87. So a 0.35 drop from freshman to senior year, which is, you know, so what that obviously leads you to suspect is that, well, the UTRs must be different. There's something wrong with the algorithms, or, you know, something like that, but not necessarily.
Yeah, because you wonder if that the young lady who was an 11.23 as a freshman, yes, if she was the 10.87 as a senior, could her senior self not beat her freshman self?
That's the question that you'd want to ask. And that, you know, the answer is, will be, of course, the senior could beat the freshman. But I don't know.
That's wild.
Yeah. And so first thing I wanted to do was go back and say, okay, well, let's take a look at our current UTR, or our UTRs for the class of 2023. So these are the people that would be 4 years following the class that we have are currently in and are studying. So the freshmen in 2020, I'm sorry, just 2020. The freshmen in 2020.
A lot of years there in the future.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, the freshmen in 2020, the average for the top 30 girls was a 9.78. And so if we look at the freshmen today, that are
top 30
freshmen today, their average is 9.6. So it's in the same range. It's pretty very steady, close. Yeah. If we look at the top 10 average, just to see if we want to see the more elite players, you know, the freshman average in 2020 was 10.15, and the freshman average for today is 10.19 for the girls. So it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
And same thing with the boys, you know, The boys, freshmen in 2020, their top 30 average is 11.36. And today, the freshmen in 2023, their average is 11.28. So it's within the margin of error. And same thing for the top 10. You know, the top 10 boys freshmen in 2020 were 11.78, and the boys in 2023 were 11.65. So, you know, it's really the same thing. So there is some talk of, you know, UTR inflation, some adjustments to the algorithm, but essentially we're seeing pretty similar numbers throughout the years.
I think what this tells me is if you're a player out there within these ranges, every time you have a jump, 11 to 11 and a half, 11 and a half to 12, 12 to 12 and a half, your prospects improve. Those little half point jumps change the outcome of your ranking because it makes sense. A person with the skill set to be a 12 will also rise in the rankings, which will also tie to it more opportunity with colleges. I wish we could find a way to do a study on what skill set do the 11s have? What do the 11 and a halves have? What do the 12s have that the 11 and a halves don't? And at what point does it just become they're a freak of nature, right?
Right.
Because you think about if you're a basketball coach, you can teach them to shoot and dribble and do all the things, but you can't teach what Steph Curry has. There's just something special. You can't teach what Kevin Durant has. There's something special. So I'm sure there's a point in this range where it just becomes something special, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I would love to tie the skills to the range and see where then just general talent takes over. But anyway.
Yeah, and it's tough because, you know, if you look at these kids that are, you know, in that sort of that special class, you know, you have your Mickelson, but in Kyle Kang and Aiden Kim and Cooper Williams, you know, they just have, you know, something. I mean, and they're all very different is what I'm trying to say, I think, is, you know, Mickelson, 6'4", 6'5". Cooper Williams is a, you know, 6'2", great family genetics and all the athletic background. You know, then Kyle Kang and Aiden Kim are, you know, Aiden Kim's a servant volleyer. Kyle Kang is, you know, a more of a steady baseliner. And they're just very different. So it's hard to say, pinpoint one thing that they would have that's different than the others because they're all so different.
Yeah, and I don't mean pinpointing just one thing, but it's so imagine if you're a coach out here and you've got some eighth grader you're trying to hit that's a righty that you're trying to teach to hit a kick serve from the ad side so that it kicks out wide, right? And you have the data that, look, if you can't hit a kick side on the ad side to put your opponent out wide, then the max UTR you're going to hit is blah, right? How many kids out there would go, okay, well, coach, let's go work on that thing, right? Because you're basically saying these are some of the skills, you know, can you hit a slice on the deuce side out wide if you're a righty? If you're a lefty, can you get on the deuce side, hit that kick way out wide, right? I think there's a lot of kids that resist improvement with their coaches. If they understood, well, I'm sealing out at X UTR because I'm not learning these skills, maybe they would become more coachable. Does that make any sense?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I think you're right. I think that it would be nice to see if, you know, hey, the top 10 kids are, you know, this much ahead of the next 90 kids and they can do these things really well.
Yes.
And so if you want to get there, you got to get there. And so this is how you're going to get there. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. All right, keep going. Sorry for interrupting.
Let me mention this if you're following along. There were some omissions from the tennis recruiting rankings, and I put these in, and that's where some of the numbers are coming from. So if you're looking for some of the numbers, you don't see them in the body of the girls' top 100. It's because they were omissions for whatever reason. I think, you know, if we look at Gracie Epps, who we know from Tulsa, you know, she's had some injuries and she hasn't really played competitively. So she was not in the tennis recruiting rankings for this year, even though she was a senior last year and now she's at University of Georgia. But, you know, you can sort of see, you know, as a freshman, she was a 10.7 and as a senior, she was a 10.3. And again, you know, you always ask, Would senior Gracie beat freshman Gracie? You'd think yes, but there's reasons why the UTR goes down, and I know that she struggled a lot with injuries and not playing competitively for last year or so. So that's something to consider. Elena Yu is one that was the highest UTR as a freshman, 11.23, and now is a 10.3. And if I understand her story correctly, as a junior, she won national hard courts, played a lot of ITF pro tournaments, has not done very well in those and hasn't been successful. So that's maybe why her UTR is dropping, is because she's taken a different path and it's not maybe working out as well as she'd hoped. And so the UTR will suffer for those reasons. So that could be a reason why her UTR is down nearly a point from her as a freshman.
Yeah, what's going on in Mason, Ohio? Because I would love different individuals there.
Not only do you have those two, but you also have Peyton Stearns from Mason, Ohio. And so, yeah, they're doing something in Mason, Ohio for sure. And, and one of the other things when we talk about comparing UTRs of, the top 10 or say some of the top girls from – as freshmen compared to their senior years, and thinking how unrealistic it is that the freshman version would beat the senior version. But if we look at the class of 2026, and their top freshman is Eva Jovic, and her UTR is higher as a freshman than the highest UTR in the senior class. Does that sound like it's right to you?
Well, now what you'd love to see is that player go play in the 18s at a national tournament, and let's find out.
Well, if anyone knew our preparation, they would think that was a loaded question, because that's exactly what we have. So, totally unscripted, but yeah. So I did look at that and I was like, well, does this Eva Jovic, does she have any matches against anyone in the class of 2023? And she does. So she played the number 10 player in the class of 2023. And she ended up beat her.
And the number 10 player is a 10.17 right now.
Michigan.
What was the score?
I'll give you one guess.
So one of them was an 11 and one was a 10, basically. 3-3?
6-0, 6-0.
Whoa.
So the top freshman in the class, the top girl in the freshman class beat the number 10 girl in the class of 2023, 6-0, 6-0. So I don't know. I'm not sure that we'd see the same result in the boys section, but girls are just a little bit, this is harder to, like I say, they do mature differently, and you can sort of become, a peak player at a lot earlier age in the girls' division than the boys. So, so that does sort of, give some validity to the UTR of the freshmen being better than the seniors. So,
and that brings up so many questions. Like, yeah, are they just so hungry? And then, when I coached kids, I used to, when a kid got, whether it's a girl or a boy, because I coach both, in football, just boys, and golf, both boys and girls. When either gender got both these two things combined, their driver's license and a car, right? Mm-hmm. Combined with a boyfriend or a girlfriend. And so I used to call it boyfriend car syndrome or girlfriend car syndrome, right? And you wonder if it's like, hey, up to a freshman, they're working hard, they're training. Then this whole world opens up to boyfriend, girlfriend, cars. I'll be honest with you. What I saw as a golf coach matches what you're seeing here. Some of my freshman girls were much more focused than the senior girls, and the freshman version probably could beat the senior version.
And I think there's a lot to that, because like one of the frustrating things in doing this research was finding sort of when you got maybe trying to run number 50 or so for the girls, you would just, I would say probably 35 to 50% had pretty much stopped playing by their senior year. And so when you're looking at UTRs, they were completely two or three matches on their record. There was like, you look at the UTR, page, the stat page, no matches in the last year, a ton of that in the girls that, you know, I think maybe the top 40, top 50, you know, they're still pretty engaged. But I think maybe those top 50 or the 50 to 100, they do have that syndrome that you talk about, and they just were not playing as much. So the data just doesn't, you know, so you would have some weird results where you have somebody that, you know, out of nowhere enters the top, you know, 60 from, you know, number 300 a year before. And, you know, so that I think that there are some issues with the data given that fact. And so I think it does make it a little bit more difficult to sort of see what's relevant. So maybe instead of looking at the senior year, maybe look at the junior year as being more reliable.
So Scott, do you just think the reason the boys' data is so different is because even though they may get their boyfriend or girl, I mean, their girlfriend in the car, the amount of growth physically just overwhelms maybe the lack of focus and attention, and so they still
and I think it's also, you know, somewhat, you know, genetic and biological. You know, I think, you know, at that age, you know, boys that are, you know, 16, 15 to 18, going through a lot of hormones, they really embrace the grind. You know, it's sort of, you know, they look at it as something that they, as a challenge that they want to get better. They're more competitive, maybe. Yeah. And again, this is just generalizations, but just trying to make some observations that, you know, I do think that there is a little bit more of a grind culture with the boys than there is with the girls. And if I look at, you know, I follow a lot of the juniors on Instagram just to, you know, see what's going on. A lot of them are posting, you know, David Goggins type material and, you know, carry the boats, and they're doing that. And the girls, they're not doing the same. They're not at least promoting the same attitudes and behaviors. And I think that shows up.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes so a combination of hormones, growth, and then maybe
just biological difference. I mean, I just think that, you know, I think that boys, they want to work hard, and they, you know, they really, you know, it's there's a lot of pride in being, you know, the best they can be, and not saying that there isn't for the girls, but, you know, there are a lot of competing factors for girls that, you know, that don't maybe go to, you know, regular school where they think they're missing out on a lot of things. And I don't think the boys have the same, what do you call it, where they're missing the prom. They don't really care about that. I think the girls, there is a little bit more on that on the girl side.
Yeah, and of course, this is anecdotal. So if you have a daughter out there and they're grinding away, that don't let what we're saying be an indictment on that your individual child, but I think we're right. Just looking for general trends.
For sure.
All right, so what's the next thing in your data? I think we've scratched the surface like 15% of what you have in here.
And like I say, I think everybody that does want to look at this stuff and dive into it, they can sort of pull out some other information that is more specific to them. So, and that's what the data is for you to, you know, it's there for you to manipulate and do whatever you want with, you know, so, yeah. So,
how would they do that? We've got it shared. So for them to manipulate it, they're just going to need to make a copy of the page.
Yeah. I think you just make a copy of it, and then you have it for your own thing, and then you can filter it and, you know, do all your VLOOKUPs or whatever you want to do with it and get what data you want out of it.
All right. So give us the next thing you got, because there's something here I want to ask about, but I want to wait till you're ready to get to it.
Okay. So I want to look at sort of just the fluidity of, you know, if are you what you are when you're a freshman? So if we take a look at their freshman.
Boys or girls?
We'll do both.
Okay.
But we'll start with the boys.
Right.
So if we look at this and say, okay, we have the top. So if we take the top 100 boys as a seniors and we look back and say, we rank them as freshmen, where did they end up? Was there a lot of fluctuation? Was there a lot of moving in and out of the top 100? How different is the top 10 as freshmen than as seniors? I think those are really relevant questions. And, you know, so the thing that I do see is, so if you're following along with us, we're looking at columns I through N on the summary tab. And, you know, for the boys, unfortunately, there's not a lot of, once, you know, so if you're a senior 1 through 10, I'm putting right next to you in column J where you were as a freshman.
So you basically top 25 made up the top 10 as a senior.
And basically the top, and within those, and only three that were outside of the top 10 entered the top 10.
Right.
So if we look at this and we say, okay, of the top 10 boys as seniors, seven of them were the top 10 as freshmen. And the lowest person to join the party was number 23, who came in at number 8. Alex Mickelson, who we mentioned earlier, was number 12 as a freshman. He finished number 1. And number 18 was able to get in and finish at number 9. So, again, it just sort of goes to that, well, why is that? I don't know. But the top 20, the top 10 boys have really separated themselves, and there's a pretty big difference, and it's pretty difficult to join that party.
And that doesn't surprise me. You know, mm-hmm. I see, for me, I'm basically seeing 30 to 40% of the top 10 as seniors were top 10 as freshmen. But then when you look down, they were all top 50, you know, yeah. So, or top 25 even. So, to get in that top 10. So it makes sense. Once you're good, you stay good.
And maybe, you know, maybe it's also, again, you know, it could be self-fulfilling, you know, those kids that are good, young, they're maybe the early developers. Early developers get, you know, a lot more attention and get a lot better coaching and a lot more, you know, engagement and all-in type behavior. And that just, you know, it's just like compound interest. It just pays off over time.
Right. All right. Let's look at 11 through 25.
Well, it's sort of the same thing. You know, we do see.
Yeah.
So 11 through 25, I'm going to highlight it for people that are watching. You know, nobody from outside the top 100, I'm sorry. One person from outside the top 100 ended up being number 25. Another 14 spots within that range group were all at least top 100. And for the most part, if you look at the numbers, you know, a few outside the top 50.
But you got a 94 that became 20, a 78 that became 21. But to your point, if you want to be top 25 as a senior, do your best to get top 50 as a freshman.
For sure. And like I say, if you're looking at the top 20, you know, it's sort of the same thing. You know, you have number 94 and number 20, but 11 through 19, the lowest one in there is a 35 as a freshman. So let's try and get to 35 if we can.
And this is based on the tennis recruiting ranking, not on the USTA ranking.
For sure. Right. Yeah, USTA ranking is not reliable for these kind of projects.
And the reason is just because it's so easy to manipulate points. You can
and not necessarily manipulate points, but also just different paths. I mean, the tennis recruiting will take a look at ITF, you know, results and other things that look at UTR. Yeah. So it's more holistic ranking, whereas USTA is simply USTA tournaments.
Right.
And there's great variation within the sections. We can get into that later, but it does not make for a reliable ranking.
And so now we look in the boys 26 to 50, you start seeing some folks outside the top 100 pop in. Two people that weren't even in the top 200 made it to the top 50 as a senior.
Right.
And you would imagine, you know, you can make up why you think that is. Maybe they started late and were very athletic and figured it out. I know some folks like that. Or maybe they were little and then late developers and finally grew and already had the skill, but now had the size to go with it.
Right. And we also sort of see where the floor is for the top 10. So there is one player that was in the top 10, finished number 34, and that's as low as anybody that started in the top 10 finished. So in other words, if you start in the top 10, according to this data, you know, your floor is at number 34. So that's not bad either.
That's really good. Yeah. So those top 10 freshmen out there right now, you will probably finish top 50 as a senior if you just don't quit.
Right. And then so we look at 51 through 75, and there is a lot more variability in here. You know, you got some newcomers that weren't ranked at all, weren't even in the, you know, they could be from, you know, another country. So we have some blanks in here that can't really account for, but you do start to see a few more of the, you know, people ranked in the top 100, you know, even a couple in the 300s finished in the top, you know, 51 to 75.
Yeah, let's keep going down. So basically your top 350 makes up your top 100 as seniors?
Yeah, I think that the lowest player that entered the rank top 100 was around 310, 312 as a freshman.
Yeah, looks like it.
And then, you know, 76 through 100, sort of the same thing. You know, we see a lot of, well, not the same thing, but so we see most of the entrants into the top 100 fall within this range, fall within this quartile.
So before you go to the girls, one of the things I'm noticing is a lot of people, when UTR came out, they stopped paying as much attention to tennis recruiting. But what I'm seeing here is a good correlation in tennis recruiting to outcomes.
Right. Exactly. That's what I wanted to sort of track as well, is how closely are those related? And they're pretty, there's not a lot of very wide variation in UTR and tennis recruiting. So.
Nice. Okay.
So looking at the girls, you know, sort of the same as we saw for the boys, there's no newcomers from outside the top 100 entering the top 10. However, there are a couple more outside, you know, maybe the top 10 that do come in. So if we look at, you know, the top 10, four are newcomers, and they come from 12, 16, 24, and 40. So 40 was the highest or lowest rated freshmen that enter the top 10, but there's a little bit of fluidity among the top, say, you know, 20, 25 to get into the top 10. So it's not quite as difficult, but still you've got to be, have a good seat on the boat to get into the top 10 as a freshman.
Yeah. And then you look at the 11 through 25, it looks more like the boys 75 to 100. I mean, that's somebody that was 214 makes it to 24. That's
right. Impressive. But that's the only person outside the top 100. So I would say it's very similar to the boys, but just the newcomer does come from a much larger distance.
Which does surprise me, because we talked about the girls as freshmen are pretty much what they're going to be as seniors, and then we have this happen.
Which is, you know, maybe that's a good thing too, because maybe those girls that are a little bit late, you know, they can make up some ground because the other girls aren't driving as far ahead as the boys are.
That's a good point. If you're a freshman out there competing hard, just know that all the other girls around you at the national level, their level as freshmen is probably not going to change much as a senior at the top. So
right, and we'll look a little bit at the UTRs here in a minute, just to sort of drive that point home. But it's pretty amazing. But yeah, here's, you know, where there's only, you know, from 26 to 50, where there's only four boys that entered that from outside the top 100. Here you see a lot of girls coming from 100 plus into the top 50.
Eight of them, yeah.
Yeah, eight of them. So that's nearly a third of that ranking group range is coming from outside the top 100. So that's a lot of fluidity.
That's super interesting there.
And, you know, overall, and I maybe should have mentioned this before at the top, but, you know, so there are 24 boys that came into the top 100 that were not ranked as freshmen. There are 30 girls who came into the top 100 who were not ranked as freshmen.
And the majority of them that come in 51 to 100.
Right.
But that's still a good rise. I mean, that's,
yeah.
You wonder, is that a combination of people who quit playing and so it opens up space in there? But I mean, you look at the girls, you got some girls at 350 that made it to the number 434 as a freshman, made it to top 100 as a senior.
About 568.
Yeah. So this is totally opposite of what I would have thought. Because the boys are still developing, I would have thought the boys would have been what the girls are. And because the girls are developed, I'd have thought the girls would have been what the boys are. That's interesting.
Yeah, and you know, one other thing, just to look over here, just look at sort of participation by gender. You know, it's kind of interesting just to sort of see, look at the class sizes for each of the classes that are available in tennis recruiting. So they go, you know, graduates, which would be, you know, seniors from last year, seniors this year, down to sixth graders now. You know, there is sort of that bell curve, you know, it seems like it sort of peaks as sophomores And that's what sort of the chart will show you is your most participation is going to be in this class of 26 right now as sophomores, nearly 2,447 boys, 1,600 girls. But by the time that they're seniors and they're graduates, only 946 boys and 530 girls. So about a third of the girls, I'd say two-thirds of the girls drop out from sophomore to graduate, whereas boys, it's, you know, maybe 2.5 or, you know, whatever that ratio be, maybe half, a little bit more than half of the boys fall out. So
a little bit of the function of just survival.
For sure.
Wow.
But it is interesting just to sort of see the difference. I mean, it's nearly, you know, nearly 2-to-1 boys to girls at the end.
Scott, is this true across all classes, or is this something that USTA did right and then quit doing? What is this, just if we went back 10 years, we'd see the same bell curve?
Yeah, I've done this a while, and it sort of is the same thing. Whereas, and this is all tennis recruiting class size, so this is whatever, however tennis recruiting identifies a tennis player and puts them into their network. That's what it is. So I'm not sure it captures high school players, but probably USTA and UTR and stuff like that. And so, you know, I have noticed that the number first, you know, that as you get closer to graduation, the numbers go down, and it's about 2-to-1 in terms of boys to girls.
Yeah, I mean, that's very clear in the data, but it is interesting that most kids get their driver's license around their sophomore year, and then it falls off really heavy.
And I think it's also, you know, you sort of realize that I don't want to play college tennis, I'm not good enough, or something along those lines. And you're just like, well, if I'm not going to play it, you know, wherever I want to go, and I still want to go to that college, why do I need to play tennis? Why do I need to keep doing all this stuff when it doesn't matter? So,
yeah, I always say kids gravitate towards what they're good at. When they realize they're not good at it, they move away from it.
Right. So that's probably what you're seeing more than anything, I would think. And so, like I said, just maybe the last thing I wanted to point out before, you know, maybe you have another question, was just sort of just the range of the UTRs for the girls. Just like I said, just blew me away how there just really was not that much. Once you became a certain level, you know, that's sort of where you stay. So if you look at sort of your peak UTR and go backwards, it's not that different in year one than it is in year four. And that was very surprising to me. So I'm not sure. Do you have any questions you want to go through, or anything else you want to look at?
No, I think that the data is super fascinating. What I would love to do at some point is do a roundtable with some of the best coaches. Think your Trent Tuckers of the world, the folks in Indianapolis, coaches all over, and begin to draw UTR is this level, and we can tie it to some skill sets that you have. Cause like I was talking to Kel Mize the other day, just commits to SMU, I think. Mm-hmm. And he talked about, man, tennis was really hard for me until my serve developed. And then he's like, and then I'm beating the heck out of everybody. It's not even really that hard.
Right. Well, you know, it's like I say, this is just a personal anecdote. You know, maybe say 3 years ago when Luke and Everett were at Tulsa, they were in the same group as Kale Mize. Kale Mize was in their group, and it's kind of weird to have this big kid there. But yeah, he didn't have great consistency. His serve was all over the place. But once the serve locks in, it's a different game.
It's a different game. I mean, he's a whole different player. And so that's why I say I would love for coaches to be able to say, here's the range of UTRs. The ones who can do these things generally move to this, from this UTR range to this one. I think you start, because every player, what does every kid do when a tennis tournament is over that they did poorly at? They had some bad losses. The next week, they're monitoring their UTR. How's my UTR going to go down? Well, then they have a good tournament. They get a good couple wins. Well, what's my UTR going to do? So they're engaged in their UTR, and what are coaches doing? They're trying to teach skills. and they may not get buy-in from players to learn those skills. Well, if you can say, look, if you want your UTR to be X, here are the skills you got to have that you don't have, you may see some buy-in from players is all I'm saying.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, I'd love to have somebody that has, say, a coaching perspective, take a look at this and get their thoughts. Other parents, are going to have different, perspectives. Any feedback is good. I'm just, like I said, data is always interesting when it means something. And if we can take this data and make it useful, then that's great. And if it turns out to be, I don't think it's worthless, but if there are some things in here that, that doesn't, it's irrelevant, that's not worth anything, that's interesting too. But I think, just sort of seeing, what the top 100 looks like, how it got there, what are the opportunities historically? And, like I say, you never want to say that, well, in 2023, only one kid entered the top 10 that wasn't in the top 10 as a freshman, so you got no shot. That's not the case. But do know that you've got to do something special to do that. You can't just say, well, it's going to happen. It's only going to happen if you do something different.
It'll be very rare, right? Let me ask you, do you see any commonalities around parts of the country? And like, I'm looking, a bunch of kids go to Laurel Springs from an academic standpoint, but are there any commonalities, like Texas does well, Florida does well, California does well, or did you dive in that at all?
Yeah, I would think that, I was thinking, I looked at the seniors for the, I looked at the girls, and you sort of look at, let's look at it by section. And okay, so we're gonna, there's a lot of girls in the eastern section. There's 12 girls in the eastern section, and then from Florida, 11 girls from the section of Florida. But if you look at it, the Florida girls are all in the top 50, and the eastern girls are basically 50 to 94. So I think, on a sectional basis, I think players seem to gravitate as they get older to Florida, Southern California, maybe the Southern section as well, and not so much the colder weather places. At the more higher end, you're going to see the players in Florida and Southern California, I think.
Well, and the other thing I'm seeing is in Florida, where they train or go to school is all over the place. But in the Eastern, it's basically the McEnroe Academy. I mean, there's other, lot of McEnroe Academies there in the Eastern section.
Yeah, and like I say, these girls in Florida, Boca, Bradenton, which is, I guess, where IMG is, Delray, it's a couple of little pockets there, too, that are pretty concentrated. Yeah, and so, and also within the data, where I could find academy information, like if they listed their academy on tennis recruiting or on UTR, I'd put that in there just to sort of see, what you just observed. Macro is sort of the place to go. There's four girls in the top 100 that are training at with McEnroe. That's pretty good.
Yeah, we've been there, and I see why they're having success.
Those players are going to North Carolina, Harvard, Yale, and Boston College. So not too bad.
Not too bad at all. Well, good deal. Anything else? This is fascinating data, and I hope the listeners enjoy going through the data with us like this.
Yeah, yeah. And like I say, it was a lot of work, but I think it was interesting to find some observations that hopefully give us some perspective when we start to evaluate sort of our progress and how things are going and what we need to be working on. So hopefully that's what y'all get out of it. And I would love to hear any feedback or anything that we could look at further. So if there is, let us know.
All right. Can't wait to see you on the next episode.
All right. See you.